The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on channelradio.co.uk/2 in association with bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and my lovely co-host who has her head in a box of sweeties at the moment.
Hold on a minute. I wasn't going to say anything at all because I thought you'll get in trouble, not me. Stephen will be like, yes, get her to eat.
I haven't had one.
What's that rustling then?
I haven't had one.
Yet. I would never have picked that one for you.
I didn't pick anything. You just shoved it at me.
I would have picked a Snicker or something for you. You got a Bounty, didn't you? Anyway, Liz, thank you very much. Celebrations. Yes.
You're welcome.
Liz, I want to ask. So I want to go back to Liz because I think HR is somewhere an area. Liz is like, Bird, I cannot believe that you're going to get me to speak
with deliberately.
A sweet in her
she
mouth.
She waited until you put that in your mouth and then asked you a question.
It's a chewy one as well, isn't it?
Take time,
anyway, look, I think HR, us employing people, is one of the fearful, scary, exciting growth that we can do in our business. What are you seeing that you think employers need to do and what are you seeing that employees need to do to make this romance? Because it's a real come together.
Employers need to sell themselves better, I think, to candidates as well.
Absolutely.
It's not a one-way street, it's a two-way street.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Because they also need to... especially when you're going for interview as well, candidates do all the legwork, do all the preparation, take time out from their own work, that day's work as well. They'll go and have this interview. Not every client is great at interviewing, so they need to have training for that too. So, and a candidate can come away and think, actually, I really like that role, it's fantastic, and they don't get any feedback, and they put all that effort into it. So it's got to be a two-way street because they are given a first impression as well as a client, and they want to make that's a buy-in for the candidate. And the candidates, I think, are making more of an effort. Much more input into preparing for interviews, going into clients, because there's a lot of competition in the market. So really, they've got to stand out. So with regards to candidates, they've got to really sell themselves. But I think that it should come from the client.
Yeah,
they're not making. Yeah,
it's absolutely right, and I couldn't agree with you more. So many organisations, especially small organisations, to be fair, that don't have HR professionals or whatever. And to be fair, the employment pattern in the UK now is most of what they're calling the jobs miracle, the 3 million new jobs we've created, are all with small businesses. But they are quite poor at actually selling their jobs, and they tend to use pre-formatted things that they use when their granny was first recruiting, I've actually turned away adverts and said, look, I'm not taking your money because that job will never get filled, because you've asked for a first from Oxford in information technology and you're paying 12 grand a year. It's just, it ain't going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Realistic expectations.
Yeah. Your expectations are all wrong. Not only are you set it at the wrong level, but you haven't given us any reason why anybody should work for you. And you see that all the time. But interestingly, and I don't know if you've come across this, I've done quite a bit of stuff recently on looking at different ways of interviewing. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of work with an organisation called Kent Supported Employment. They're part of the education people, and they're a group funded by Kent County Council that help people with supported needs into work, so people with disabilities. And we do a lot of work with them. And one of the people I work with, Amanda Parvin, who runs Ethical HR, she's pioneered different ways of interviewing people, especially people with autism, because they do not like confrontational across the table interviews. They just find that really difficult to cope with. So she pioneered, there was an ITV program about what she'd done. She pioneered interviewing by going for a walk with a dog. Which was a lovely way of interviewing someone because, people that are on the autism spectrum have a huge amount of talent. And a lot of it was being overlooked because we were traditionally trying to recruit them. And they don't, more than anyone, they don't suit traditional recruitment patterns.
No, it's not conforming. It's like the bright lights as well and the sounds as well. So that's
absolutely
perfect. Yeah, perfect kind of situation.
But that's right for everybody as well, can I just say? I know we're saying it about autism. What a lovely way to find the best of somebody.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're trying to do, isn't it?
Liz was just, what she said there was just absolutely right, that our interviewing, I'm going to, funnily enough, Athelbrae, our lovely folks, friends at Athelbrae, I'm going to see Keith in a couple of...
Nothing lovely about Athelbrae.
They start sending the gifts.
No, don't fool people. They called me fat and hairy.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing lovely about them, I tell you.
That was just your legs, though, love. Yeah. Don't worry about it. They're a training company, and they do leadership and management training. Right. And one of the things they're doing is recruitment training, but training people how to interview and do things properly, which is brilliant. Because, again, the interview process is very formulaic for a lot of people. You know, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time? You know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And people do that because they can't. They don't know any other way of doing it, yeah? They're just trying to get it out of the way because they don't like interviewing.
Yep. Yeah. And when you say interview, like a panel interview, people have got the preconception of, like, three or four people in a row, like, up on high, looking down on you, you know, and it's just very confrontational, like you say.
Yeah.
And that does need to change. And it's having much more of a fluid kind of approach to interviewing as well, and being prepared, just being prepared from the client side as well. And literally engaging with that candidate and not going straight in, right, okay, what can you bring to the role? But, oh, I see you do this. Or, you know, and it's softening it initially and then going in. So you make the candidate feel relaxed and at ease, and that you get the best out of them.
Have you come across any organisations starting to use video for their interviews? And actually, I've seen some examples where organisations are using tracking mechanism and algorithms to check people, whether, you know, to see deception identified in the interviews and such.
Not from the client, the schools that I've worked with, so they haven't used any video interviewing, but I know other companies that offer that service as well, which is really interesting, because that's a different, it's now moving into being a different direction.
Yeah.
And I think that will come.
Mm.
Absolutely. Mm. But it's also, people are saying, you know, traditional interview, you want to meet the person in person rather than, you know, on screen, and then that's unfair for the rest of the market.
Yeah. We owning a recruitment portal, we're 20 years old this year. And at various times through that, we've experimented with video interviewing, and it's always not gone anywhere, because eventually people go, do you know what, I don't want to do this. I think what you're talking about, Gary, is another level altogether. You know, you're tracking eye movements and
facial tics and, or anything that just tells.
Like, yeah, and just to be topical for a minute, whether they sweat or not.
Like a lie detector on the screen.
Yeah. You know, that's got a whole set of interesting connotations to it as well. And my immediate thought about that when you mentioned that, having just talked about having to put yourself out to gain talent at the moment because it is in demand, it'll be interesting to see what effect that has on the market. If you tell, because you've got to tell people you're doing it, whether people go, do you know what, I don't like that. I don't fancy that. I don't fancy being analysed by a computer. Be interesting, but it's going to come no matter what. It will come.
I think it will.
Cool. Good. I want to get around to talking to Gary in a minute, because we're going to have a big debate about GDPR and other stuff. No, we're not really. Because cybercrime and cyber stuff is really, my mum.
Cyber stuff.
Yes, I go to see my mum every Saturday. She's 93, bless her, right? And I've told her about all this kind of stuff. And she bought herself an iPad, and she does online banking and stuff like that. And she came to all of this in her 90s, yeah. I went round there the other day, and she was sniggering. I'm going, what have you done, Mum? She went, you'll be so proud of me. And I'm going, what have you done? She said, I got a phone call. She said, and this bloke said he was from BT. And she said, I let him talk for ages. And then I went, you're a bloody liar, you are. And put the phone down.
And this guy at the end in BT,
the BT
was like,
oh, gone, oh right. Yeah. No, she was absolutely right. They were trying to scam her.
Yeah, cool.
I'm going to quickly read through this list, because I did read through it last week.
The Ashford Business Awards.
It's the Ashford Business Awards finalists. The awards are tomorrow evening at the Ashford International Hotel, and I'm proud to be hosting that on behalf of Best Business Events. And the award finalists are Realia Marketing, I'm not going to go through all the categories again because I did them all last week, and we're going to interview the winners and stuff afterwards. So I'm just going to read out all the finalists. Riala Marketing, Will Create, Made in Ashford, Oasis, Whitefish Marketing, Colin Bat Removals, East Kent Foot Care, Kieran Osborne, NPR IT, Direct Line Structures, Wilden Wood Style, KDG Hypnotherapy, EDT Automotive, Masonry Frame Systems, Plamil Foods, Hypo Hounds, Docker Bakery and Brewery, The Hyde and Fox, Christmas in Tenterton, The Jenner Group, OSG Architecture, Sterling Construction Works, Destra Engineering, Katie Barker, Melissa Dawkins, AJ Sharp, Sarah Williams, Rachel Davenport, Diamond Circle Weddings, Mums in Ashford, Sharp Relations, Once Upon a Mat, and Cosmos Care. Congratulations to all of you for being finalists in the Business Awards. We will know the winners and runners-up sometime tomorrow evening.
Do you know what's nice about that list? It isn't just new businesses. No. It's an absolute plethora.
A plethora, that's a good word.
A plethora of...
A plethorosus.
Of different ages of businesses.
Yep.
And I like it because half of them I know. Don't we? You know? And I'm really pleased the businesses that you know are applying for these awards as well.
Yep.
What are you wearing?
What am I wearing? Yeah. What now?
It's the most important thing, isn't it?
Oh, tomorrow?
Yeah, what are you wearing now? I know. What colour are we going?
I've only got black. See, I
Cumberband?
I bulked up a bit since the last year. I bulked up a bit. And
have you been going to the gym?
No. I went for a walk on Sunday. For 4 miles.
I heard you come up the stairs.
I know, it nearly killed me.
We need to talk.
It nearly killed me, yeah. The only reason I finished as quick as I did is I needed a loo. Anyway.
What, the walk or this afternoon?
No, the walk. I bulked up a bit, so I can't wear me turquoise velvet DJ. It don't fit.
Oh,
yeah, it's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Tracy Ferguson's been on.
Has she? Hello, Trace.
She's said, good morning, Paul, Bird and guests. I'm visiting Romney Resource with Chris Pollard and the team today to see the brilliant work they do, so I'll listen in to us later. So can you congratulate all the team there, please, on the awards won at the recent, I think it's Collier Ferguson Charitable Awards. Much love, Tracy Ferguson. Yes, we can.
Cool. Well, I'm going to do two things from the Federation of Small Business. Alison has sent a tweet and she says, Business Bunker, we had a thank you breakfast for our volunteers recently. You can see some of them in this photograph. And can we just have an additional shout out for them? They're all great. Oh, look, there's you there too. And the ones that
he's got it in for you today.
Yeah. And the one that was untaggable was the fire station in Tunbridge. So she's tagged everybody else in it. You know who you were. We had a fabulous time at McNaid's Foods last Monday.
Nice.
Not yesterday, Monday before. It was really good. And while we're talking about Federation of Small Business, they've sent me a press release from the policy office. With fewer than 4 weeks until the UK heads to the polls, the Federation of Small Business, which represents small firms and the self-employed, is to launch in its Back to Business 2019 manifesto. Fresh analysis from the group shows that there are typically 7,000 sole traders in every UK constituency, part of a wider community of more than 25,000 people who work in a smaller business in each constituency. As many high streets across the country continue to struggle, the FSB is asking the next government to fundamentally reform business rates by enhancing and making permanent the retail discount, which entitles small shops in England to a third off their rates bills, and removing more small businesses from the system altogether. I should think so too. I've got a high street premises in Canterbury. I pay, wait for this, £65,000 a year in rates. Yeah. Good, isn't it? The small business group is also calling on the government to reduce the burden of employers' national insurance contributions, which effectively serve as a jobs tax by uprating the employment allowance. Doing so would, as in years past, ensure that no small business employing 4 people on the national living wage pays employers' NICs. That's tier 2 and tier 4 NICs as well, isn't it? They're urging policymakers to back the self-employed with adoption, maternity and paternity pay and help to access financial products. They'd also like to see an overhaul of the universal credit system. Elsewhere, the FSB is reiterating the need to implement the measures it has previously secured, which are aimed at ending a $2.5 billion late payment crisis that destroys 50,000 businesses a year. They include holding boards accountable for poor supply chain treatment by making the audit committee of every large business responsible for payment practices, properly empowering a swiftly appointed small business commissioner, banning late payers from all public sector procurement opportunities. And the FSB National Chairman Mike Cherry said for the last 3 years, the interminable uncertainty around Brexit has dragged focus, attention and imagination away from the task of helping the UK's 5.8 million small businesses to survive, grow and enhance our communities. It's time to get back to business. It's very true.
It is.
Business right. 101, uncertainty is a killer. I don't care what you decide to do. Decide to do something, then we'll cope. Whichever way you go, we'll cope. But all the time you're sitting on the fence, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah. And also, just to add to that as well, if you are not registered to vote, you must go and register to vote so that you can vote and stop complaining about something that you haven't got or have got that you didn't vote for. Yep. It is so important to empower yourself with a vote. And again, I don't care which way you go. This isn't politics. This is just, come on. If you are not registered, and I literally start at home with your family. My daughter is not registered to vote. I am fuming with her. You know, I'm so full of empowerment, but it's so important that, especially, I mean, she's 21. So, you know, she should be voting. Mm. Come on. You know, this is, if you want to empower yourself, that is absolutely a must.
The funny thing is, after all this time, we're still talking about the same things. Because when you were saying that, the very first vote I was eligible to vote in ever was joining the economic community. And 50 years later, we're still talking about exactly the same thing.
Nothing changes. People can't even change themselves, let alone change anything else. Yeah,
exactly.
So, you know, but it's really important you vote.
I agree. I have a big downer on our so-called democracy. I don't think it works very well. And I think one of the biggest things out of this whole Brexit fernango has been that we've discovered that our democracy doesn't work very well.
Well, the measurement is there to be seen now.
Yeah, and I think at some point in the next few years, once we've sorted this out, we're going to have to take a big, long, serious look at how it works. However, I agree 100% with Bird. You have a vote, use it.
Yeah. Use your vote,
The amount of people that are registered to vote that tell me I'm not voting. And they go, that'll teach them. And you go, really? You think that by not voting, they'll take any notice? It's like going and spoiling your paper. They just throw the paper away.
I tell you what it's like. It's like Strictly Come Dancing.
It's exactly like that.
I'm serious.
Yeah.
People don't vote. I know, Gary. No, there's a reason to this. And so you have to make it relatable sometimes. So everybody watch Strictly Come Dancing. And if you don't, then you're not being honest, because you do, right? So we're watching Strictly Come Dancing. Gary, I can see you shaking your... You need to watch it, love. It's awesome.
Okay.
Right, so we've got Strictly Come Dancing.
More people voting it than a general election.
Go figure. So that's what I'm saying. Relate it to that. So people don't vote for the people that they think are going to make it through. That's it.
Yeah.
So if you want that person to be in and you think they are the best, vote for them. Yeah. You don't not vote because you think they might get in. Mm. It's nonsense. And that's why I'm saying go back to Strictly, because then they'll go, oh, my God, they should have gone through. And why are those people? It's a popularity contest. Yes. That's what voting is all about, isn't it?
It's a popularity contest.
It's a popularity contest. Not who's the best.
Hence how every politician goes, would you like some free, whatever it is.
It's not who's the best. Mm.
Yeah.
Strictly. Anyway, I'm telling you. General election, strictly.
That's the end of a party political broadcast on behalf of a bunker party.
We said we weren't doing any politics.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway. No,
but I agree. Everybody should vote. If you're eligible to vote, register and vote. If you can't get, you can do a postal vote. We're going to talk to Gary in a moment. But you can do a couple more tweets or emails.
Oh, how exciting.
And then in 2 minutes, we're going to talk to Gary.
You've got two tweets. And it's very rare that my finger comes out, but my finger's out here pointing at you.
All right.
And the first one would be the gifts. They're two gifts. So you've got a gift from Diamond Circle Weddings showing you how to get yourself less bulked. And then we've got one that says, please give Chris Pollard Hashtag snake hips. A big old bear hug from moi. And that's Jules Serkins. Thanks, Jules. Yes, we can.
I wasn't listening. What?
No,
I was checking okay. me output. What?
I said there was two gifts for you. Go check them out.
I'm trying to. Go on.
Dandelion Time. We'll be holding a Christmas craft fair in West Farley on September the 8th. From 11 until 3. There will be so much to do and see. Craft activities, stalls, music. Oh, my goodness, it goes on and on. Dandelion Tea Room will be open for refreshments, delicious homemade cakes and hot food. Plenty of parking. See, they listen to us. This is what we say. We all want parking and free admission. And there is a bus stop in Charlton Lane. And they even tell you, get ready for this, number 23 bus. And that goes Golston Bungalows stop. So if you are unable to join the celebration on the event, support Dandelion Time for Christmas by joining the Big Give Challenge. And you can go to www. I didn't think you were listening to me. Dandeliontime.org.uk.
Cool. I can't find these. Ah. You'll have to read them.
Well, I did. The gifts.
All right, okay.
You can't read a gif, can you?
True.
You've got to see them. They've put it on there as well at Vanilla Web. Oh, but you're banned.
I'm partially suspended, so Twitter aren't showing me.
Anyway,
everything.
Marsh Breakfast Networking, 28th of November at the Ship in 108 High Street, and that's in Dimchurch. www. marshnetwork.co.uk.
The Kent Business School is organising the third Kent Business Summit held at the University of Kent Sibson Building on the Canterbury campus on Friday the 10th of January 2020 from 9 a.m. to 4:30.
I know who's going.
Are you going?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
You're going.
Yeah.
Keith Mabbott's going.
Yeah, loads of us are going. Loads went last year. Burb went last year because she's on the cover of the report.
I'm so serious about business. I love business. I really love business. I got so excited and I'm just being really sensible and writing everything down. And the only moment that I smile and like I'm being stupid with Helen Wolby, who was the keynote speaker, who was doing something stupid that you don't see the end of it, they capture me.
And put it on the front of the report, the photograph.
I'm so embarrassed.
Anyway, the event is made possible through the generous support for head sponsor Crow and media partner KM Media Group. Over 400 Kent business leaders, local government decision makers and academic experts are expected to attend the county's flagship event to work constructively on tackling regional challenges and how to promote Kent as a sustainable, innovative, forward-thinking and outward-looking county. Full details of the day's programme and a booking link can be found by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/KBS. What there is a number of talks on very strategic things and then roundtables. Last year, I chaired the roundtable on diversity, inclusion and skills in the workplace. There are a number of other roundtables going on. What happens is we have an hour or so's discussion on each topic and an academic from the university takes away all the points, does some research and writes up a big report, which is then available to download later. Yeah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. And it'll be the third year this year.
I've got a tweet here that is really, really interesting and it goes about what we've just said. So this is from Daniel Priestley and he's on my feed. He says this, and this is really interesting. There were only 7,500 companies that grew revenue and staff by more than 20%. That's 7,500 out of 5.7 million businesses in the UK. Yeah. So here's the stat. For every 10,000 companies, only 13 grew by more than 20%.
Yep.
Isn't that a great stat? Thanks, Daniel.
It is.
That's Scale Up Report. That's from the Scale Up Report.
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting. A lot of that is because we've got this inertia going on as well.
So
but,
interesting.
But also, it's... That's a trend that happens over time. Just for what it's worth, the year that I was born, 1955, yeah, I know, the FTSE 100 in 1955, there are only six of them still in business.
Yeah. I think that's the way it should be, though, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of them...
Isn't that innovation and growth?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And
if you don't innovate, you die. And that happens all the time. Of course, a lot of them got taken over or bought out or moved or renamed or whatever. But a lot of businesses die because they don't innovate. And you know,
blockbusters.
Technology overtakes you. I mean, the music industry is a classic example of being obsessed with worrying about people tape recording, you know, Radio 1's tape lists, while everybody else was busy developing digital downloads, and they missed the boat. Missed about big time, and Apple captured the market, and then Spotify captured the market, and before you know it, they're struggling.
There's a market that we didn't even see. I saw a quote just now by "you can't see, you can't do what you can't see." Yeah. But I don't believe that at all. Actually, who would have thought that Netflix would have taken the marketplace of blockbusters? That experience, you wouldn't have thought that. Who would have thought that we would allow somebody into our home? Airbnb.
Yeah.
You just wouldn't ever. Yeah. So I think actually business is really different now than what it was, because actually what we think it's going to be isn't happening.
It's one of those interesting things about innovation as well, is that, you know, you get so many people that claim to spot gaps in a market, but true innovation isn't like that at all. I remember distinctly hanging around in the 1980s and 1990s, and I don't remember a single person coming up to me and going, "Do you know what? If only we had an online platform where you could post pictures of kittens, we would be home and dry." Nobody mentioned that to me ever. Yeah. Mm. But there you have it. You know, it's basically you invent an industry and it either takes off or it doesn't. And whether it takes off or not is neither here nor there. I'm quite facetious these days, and if, you know, people ask me if I went back in time, what would I say to a 15-year-old me? And that's really, really easy. Invent Facebook, basically. You can't predict. You've just got to keep trying to innovate. And that's the problem. People want to keep going with what they were doing or make minor adjustments, whereas sometimes you've got to throw the whole thing out and start again. Cool. Do you know what? Talking about such things, throwing it away and starting again.
I know, it's really interesting. We've practiced this.
Yeah. This show is produced, mate. It's produced within an inch of its life. Yeah. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome, for the very first time, onto the show, Mr. Gary Hibbard. Gary is from Cyberfort Group. Gary, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. It's an absolute pleasure to see you.
Thank you.
Why don't you kick off by telling us a little bit about Gary?
Okay.
And then about Cyberfort.
Okay, sure. Yeah. So, funnily enough, if I went back to my 15-year-old self and said, you know, what would you do? I would carry on doing what I'm doing now. Because at 15, that's when I discovered technology and fell in love with IT. Saw a film called War Games, which I don't know if anyone remembers or not. I saw that film back in 83, I think it was, 84. Fell in love with hacking and wanted to learn all about this new emerging technology. And that's what I did. I learned how to program in various different languages. And I worked in very small organizations helping them develop software applications. This is the precursors to Windows. So this was back in the Microsoft MS-DOS days. I remember those days, DR-DOS and MS-DOS. That was like the Betamax and VHS sort of battles. Mm. Worked for some very small organizations, none of the names that anyone would recognize, but just steadily worked my way through from programming into PC support, building PCs, learning networks, and then working my way up and through into technology, to the point where I was lucky enough to work for a large outsourced call center. And some of their clients were the likes of BT and Woolworths and Northern Rock and various other large banks and whatnot. And they had some real issues just understanding how to manage security and email and various different compliance type matters. But I loved the topic. I was really just, I would do anything I could to learn something new. So they just said to me, "Gary, we need someone who can act as an internal consultant for all these organizations. Would you do it?" So I said, "Absolutely. I'm all over that." So I just learned everything I could about data protection. So this was back in 98 when data protection wasn't as sexy and as interesting as it is today with GDPR. And nobody wanted it, but I took it on. And that was 20 plus years ago now. So learning everything about information governance, wanted to understand not just about the technology, but about the human interaction. Mm-hmm. So I was interested in it way back when, before the internet really started taking over and before email was, you know, seen as a business critical tool. I remember the days when people said, I could live without email for a week. It's fine. If it goes down, it's okay. So I've been interested in watching the innovators. So I watched Bill Gates grow into dominance, and then same with Steve Jobs and Elon Musk and these innovators looking at technology. So that brings me to the point where about 10 years ago, I'd been working at laterooms.com and I'd worked at GE Money running their security and various different things for really large organizations, that a colleague came to me and said, Gary, look, we're not really making the changes at the boardroom that we really need to make. We're not making the strides and the headway that we need. I'm going to start up a business. Would you like to come on board? And at that time, I'd just taken a job as global information security and business continuity for Laterooms. So I said, look, I've just taken on this fantastic role. I'm going to run with that for a little while. But when you get busy, give me a call. 6 months later, I was leaving Laterooms and just said, right, okay, let's just do this together. And that was just me and him building up the business then just to work with SMEs, because we recognised that if we were going to make any real changes in this world, and that was one of our objectives, to make the world a safer place for everybody, that was one of our missions, one of our goals, and that's something that we still strive for today. That's what we were all about. So 10 years ago, we just worked with small organisations. We started that business. And then 2 years ago, we were approached by a gentleman called Andy Haig, who came to us with this real great idea that he wanted to put together an interesting cybersecurity company. Now, remembering all that we did was we were consultants. We just helped people, practical guidance to help you with your cybersecurity problems, working for everyone from one guy in a room all the way up to 2,000 people and everything in between. And he said, look, I'm building this thing called the Cyberforce Group, and it's going to start. It's started with the Bunker, which is down in Kent. And the Bunker helps defend data. It's a Cold War bunker, or ex-Cold War bunker, which we now have using as a data center. So it's as secure as any building ever you can care to mention. We all hear about data centers. I would urge you to go along to the Bunker in Kent and take a look, and I'll talk about that in a few minutes. But the Bunker itself just offers this unique location to store data. Tagged onto that, he wanted to bring a very technical team of penetration testers and vulnerability scanners. So these are highly creditable and skilled hackers. They are ethical hackers, so they do the sexy stuff, they do the really interesting stuff, the stuff that you see on the TV programs like Mr. Robot and such. The only thing that separates them and the bad guys is they have morals, and they have this, you know, their moral compass is set slightly differently. But they use the same techniques, they have the same mindset. So it's a really technical, quite interesting area. And then they wanted to put on the front of that a consultancy, somebody who understood the human aspects of cybersecurity, so that we could talk to people in plain English and business practical senses, rather than just come at this from a technical perspective. We were coming at this with a from a perspective of saying, look, it's a people problem. Data is about people, whether it's in large quantities, whether it flows through your organization, it's about people. And that's what we bring. So that's what Cyberforce is, essentially offering good advice and guidance, being able to detect vulnerabilities in your systems and then be able to assure you that those can be closed, and making sure that you can be protected.
And do you help once people have fallen foul of these things? Do you help them extricate themselves from that?
Absolutely, yeah, and that's happening more and more. Yeah, so yeah. We have phone calls almost on a weekly basis, I would say, that from organisations who have fallen foul to phishing attacks. Where, you know, I'm sure we've all received phishing emails where you get an email that looks like it's from a legitimate source, but in actual fact, it's from the bad guys. And there's 3.4 billion of these get sent every single day.
Yeah.
You know, it's a frightening quantity.
Yeah.
But just one thing to bear in mind around that, you've got to remember, is that we have all gone online. We talk about innovation within small businesses and such. Criminals have innovated as well. Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, they have used tools. They've automated the tools. So when I started back in 84, 85, anybody who used just a script would be called a script kiddie. So you're using a tool that someone else has built. Nowadays, cyber criminals are using scripts and tools, automated tools to be able to attack on large quantities.
Yeah.
But we do help organisations, again, whether they're small businesses or whether they're large, to be able to manage every aspect of, one, making sure that there are no ghosts in the machine so that we can cleanse their machine, if you like, through to just literally holding the hand through the process, making sure that their clients are protected and such.
It's a really difficult thing as well, isn't it? I had an incident last week where I try to be as aware as possible, especially of phishing attacks and stuff like that. And I got this email purporting to be from my bank. Oh, you're having a laugh. That is the most pathetic phishing attack I've seen, and I've deleted it. It was from my bank.
Right.
And so you've got two problems here. You've got organisations that don't understand how to deal with their clients effectively and how to distinguish themselves from phishing attacks. Yeah, and I don't want to get anybody, but it drives me nuts. You know, I used to be head of security at a bank. Yeah, many many years ago. So I know the difficulties and I know how tough it can be. But really, there's still some really poor practices out there amongst some of our banks in terms of how they handle things, yeah? I got a phone call the other day from a bank. This is your bank, XYZ. Can you just give us... hold on a minute. I'm not giving you anything. Why am I giving you something? We need to verify who you are. No, you called me. You called me. I'm not telling you anything. Well, we need to, you know, and I go, your procedures are not very good, yeah? I'm not telling you anything because I don't know who you are, yeah?
And that's all the time that happens.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And it drives me nuts. And the email I got from the same bank as it happened the other day, I have a different account with a different bank, and they have a far more robust way of doing it. When they send you an email, they go, there's a message for you on your internet app. If you log in, you can read the message and read it there. That's this one was, click here for doo-doo. Oh, no. But also, coming back to the other side, so many phishing scams are just so authentic looking. And I've caught myself about to click something and go, oh, hold on a minute, maybe. Because it's so easy to just get dragged into things.
It is. I mean, there's two schools of thought. I mean, one is to say that quite often with phishing attacks, the cyber criminals now are applying psychological triggers and tricks within their processes. So they understand about, you know, sending a phishing email attack on a Friday afternoon. So Friday afternoon fraud is quite high because they know that people are time pressured. They want to leave for the weekend and spend time with their loved ones and such. Or they'll send it on a Monday morning when everyone's come back to work.
They're looking for the perfect storm.
They're looking for the perfect storm. But even the, you know, I know we're all probably very accustomed to, you know, the Nigerian fraud where you get this prince that's got X millions of pounds.
I've made a fortune out of them. I really have.
I mean, interestingly enough, a lot of people say, well, that's an obvious scam. You know, there's clearly lots of spelling errors and such. But in actual fact, that is part of the scam because what they're trying to do is they've got a funnel of 2 billion people. They don't want 1.9 billion people sending reply. What they do want is for us to say, actually, that's clearly a scam. I'm not going to respond. What they are looking for is that person who doesn't see it as a con, doesn't see it as a scam.
Yeah.
And these are the kinds of things that which have become part of popular culture now. But these are the kinds of things that we should be teaching in schools. Mm. So we do a lot, Cyberfort does a lot of work in schools as well. So we do lots of talks in schools to try and educate people.
What's the intention behind this? I just don't get it.
I was just going to ask a similar question as well. Maybe if we can double up on the questions,
let's double.
Gary. Yeah. Ken Business Radio, the website for this radio show, gets attacked every day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially by a company in France called Elad Telecoms. And every day they log on about 200 times. Yeah. Why?
Yeah.
What is in it for them?
I mean, there's lots of different reasons. Mm. I mean, I just talked about there that the you know, that this is big business now. So if it's organised crime, if you have a very popular website, if you have a place where lots of there's lots of footfall, your site becomes what is a watering hole. Because what they need to do now is if I can infect your website with some malicious code, everybody who visits your website suddenly will be infected by this the malicious software. Yeah. So that's one reason.
So they're planting malware.
So where's, and forgive me for being so ignorant, but where's the business in that? Because obviously, where's the money made? Is it in the scam that you're looking for that one person who'll give you £1,000 or £50 or is it that incremental criminal gain?
Incremental gain in that sense. Mm. You know, there's usually, you know, as the police often say, follow the money, and that's really what it is. It's funding. That they're looking for. So the more data that they can have access to, the more people that they can...
Do they sell the data?
Yes.
Right, okay.
So quite often that will end up in a dumpster site on the dark web, which, you know, some people may have heard of. And these, it will be large swathes of personal information. It can also be used for exploitation and blackmail. So, you know, dating websites and such where we're revealing highly sensitive information.
I had one of those the other day. We got access to your camera.
Yes.
And we caught you doing da 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 da.
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, I think the sweetest phone call I ever had with that is we also support a number of organisations with their cyber insurance products. This one particular lady, she was 82, because she kept telling me she was 82 and just said, I've received this email.
I'm 82,
and
I'm
82, you know, and this has happened. I've got this email and I can promise you I haven't done anything. I don't even think my camera's, and I just, there's lots of them out there. But again, if you're sending 3.4 billion of these a day.
Someone's going to fall for it.
You're going to get all you need is 0.001%.
It's interesting, isn't it? I had one the other day purporting to be from HMRC, an email purporting to be from HMRC. And just by pure coincidence, and it was pure coincidence, half an hour before I'd been on the phone to HMRC. And you think, blimey, that's a coincidence. But it's not really, when you think about how many people speak to HMRC on a given day and how many billion emails, there's going to be a number that coincide.
Yeah? Absolutely. I often say to people, have you been a victim of cybercrime? They'll say, no, it's, you know, it'll never happen to me. And then I'll ask the question, have you ever had a phishing email? And they'll say, I get those all the time. I say, right, okay, so... For you to be a victim of cybercrime, are you telling me you have to have actually clicked on that link? Because if you walk down the street, any street, and someone tried to mug you 100 times a day, you'd say, hey, I've been a victim of street crime.
Yeah.
And you'd report that to the police. Yeah. And yet, because we get these all the time, people aren't seeing the threat anymore.
It's a matter
and again,
of perspective, isn't it?
It is. And it's interesting that, again, you know, believe me, it's not just us looking at this. Cyber criminals are looking at this and they're recognising that people aren't paying attention. And that's what they're looking for. So what we need to do, and that's what CyberFort does do, is provide practical advice and guidance to help people and say, look, you know, take these steps, do the bare minimum, don't become the next victim. And that's a really important message is, you know, all you've got to do is, if you just do one or two things, you can actually improve your situation. And this goes back to the 80s when we used to have the big, the neighbourhood watch campaigns don't become the next victim, you know, make sure your house has got the lights on, make sure you lock the doors, make sure you lock your gates, et cetera, et cetera. And that's kind of where we are today. We've got to start to take those steps and we've got to be accountable and take responsibility ourselves.
Is it best we do nothing?
How do you mean by do nothing?
Is it best that we don't click? Is it best that, you know, should I click on my phone? Should I click on my laptop? Should I click on... What do we not do or what do we do?
Okay, so in the terms of things like phishing emails, you can, if they have a link, I mean, first thing to do is just read through it and just say to yourself, does this feel real? Yeah. You know, if you don't bank with that particular bank and it says, we have just noticed some malicious activity on your account, just ask yourself, right, okay, that's not to do with me. If it has a link on there, is it pushing, asking you or expecting you to click on that link? Hover your mouse over that link. Does it actually take you, you know, so if it's, I don't know, natwest.co.uk, but your mouse over the top of it displays evilmachines.co.uk.
Now, I might be being blonde, Gary, so forgive me. You know when people say, don't open the email?
Yeah.
So you think, exactly, yeah. So you this is normal for you because you're like, mm-hmm. right, when you go into the email, if I went into, so I've got it coming up on my semi laptop and there it is sat in the side and I see it and I think, oh, should I open that? Because then it will come through into my machine.
Yeah.
I can still open it and read it.
You can still read the email. Usually what the advice is, if it has an attachment, is don't open the attachment. Okay. Because that's the thing that usually has some malicious content. Again, you know, the idea is that they will be able to then perhaps take over your machine, you know, install a key logger. So that's how they can then take over your machine.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? That's why I think I can't go with you. It's like, this is mad. This is just too out there. So it won't happen to me. I think that's where people...
Yeah. So a lot of people think it'll never happen to me. But, I mean, the great term is phishing. And it is just like just spreading their nets just far and wide. Mm. They may not mean to get you. They might not be targeting you. But the chances are that if you click on a link or if you open an attachment, then you will become part of their... you're moving further down their funnel, their sales funnel now. So you're moving in through their process, just like any other business process. And they'll move you to the next stage, which is then they will contact you or they will just simply say, yep, you clicked on this link. You've now installed a piece of software. We can take over your machine. If you haven't done the bare minimum, like install anti-malware protection and that type
of
thing.
So scary to hear take over your machine, isn't it?
This is why Gary's in the business he's in, because it is scary. And the fact is that a lot of people will sit there and go, oh, you know, well, I've got a website or I've got this, but I'm only little. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't, because, again, unless, you know, they are targeting you, and the likelihood is, thankfully, you will probably just be collateral damage. You know, they may not be targeting you. So, you know, you need to start to think about what are those minimum steps that you need to be putting in place. Now, a very simple approach to doing this, and I'd advise every organisation to do it, irrespective of size, is sit down with a blank piece of paper and start to map out what data you actually own. What information are you actually holding on to? And then ask yourself how valuable that information would be to somebody externally if it was to be breached or to be lost on a laptop or whatever, you know, if somebody does manage to gain access. And you can start to then think, well, what additional security and controls do I need to put in this? And if you employ people, have policies in place that say these are the rules that we expect. This is the rules of behaviour, back to values, as Liz mentioned, and culture, and saying, look, it starts at the top. And we put these measures in place for a good reason, because we respect people's data. And that comes back to the good old GDPR.
Hmm. Cool. Well, sadly, we've run out of time. Go on.
I've got an event. I just need to talk about that.
Yeah, of course.
Just very briefly. So we are, if you want to know more about these kinds of things and more importantly, practical steps that you can put in place to protect yourself, we're actually running an event at the Bunker on the 27th of November. It starts at 9:30, finishes at 2. You'll get to hear some great speakers talking very practical, great advice about taking accountability and responsibility. But we'll give you some tricks and some ideas. I'm also going to throw this in as well. We will talk on the day about something where you will actually be able to have access to £1,000 worth of free tools that will actually help SMEs to help them. And that's by another organisation, but it's somebody that we support very much. So, yeah, come along. If you can learn more about us on our website on cyberthoughtsgroup.com, all the information is on there.
And we'll put the links to the event that you're running on the website as well. Do go to the Bunker. My servers are at the Bunker. Go to the Bunker. It's an eye-opener to go and see it there. What's the date again?
It's the 27th of November.
The 27th of November. Get along to the Bunker, which is just outside of Sandwich.
That's right. Places are limited, so you are going to have to get in there quite quickly if you do want to come along. But as you say, it's a fantastic location. Thank you.
Gary, thank you so much for that. We're right at the end of the show. I need to read you this tweet because it's been sitting on my phone for ages. It's from TN Recruits. We'd love a mention on the Business Bunker pool. We have some hot news. We're about to launch TN Recruits Law. So do check them out. Follow them on the Twitter, TN Recruits. That's Neil Simmons and his crew, who basically do recruitment in the TN postcode area. And they're about to launch TN Recruits Law. So good luck with that. Have you got anything you need to do now?
No.
I need to tell you about Grapevine Network, which is a property networking group that's just launched. And their next meeting is the 21st of November, which is Thursday evening. And it's at the Marine Hotel in Whitstable. And it's all things property, of which I know nothing about. But for some bizarre reason, I'm the keynote speaker. I have no idea why. But do come along. It will be fun. I think that's about it, really. Just to remind you that the Business Bunker Extra Show is on Friday at 11 o'clock, presented by the lovely Amanda Flanders, and her co-host this week is Mr. Ben Abbott. And their guest is the absolutely gorgeously lovely Lisa Settle. Lisa from Telcare Limited, the telecoms company over there on Medway City Estate. Lisa is also the brains, the driving force behind Business Diaries, which is the most fabulous of things. And the next Business Diaries is on December the 5th, and we're all going to that.
I have got something to say.
Yeah, go on.
You know, I'm going away to this conference the next couple of days.
Yep.
Super excited. I'm going to come back. You're going to have to scrape me off the ceiling. Remember that I said to you they've been speaking to us? So they've put a special code for us. So if you want to come along, it's Experts Empire. It has got Tom Billu. He is the most amazing. He took a business from zero to about $3 billion in 5 years. It's a nutrition company in America. You have to go and see this. It's up in London. It's Wembley. I will be there. Come with us. It's www.expertempires.co.uk/, and here's what you get, Be Bunker, and you'll get some special stuff for them. Come along. I'm going.
Fantastic. So 27th of November at the Bunker.
Yeah.
On cyber security. Go along to that. Go along to Birdsing with her discount code. Listen to the Business Bunker Extra Show on Friday. But I need to say a huge thank you to today's guests, the lovely Liz Nevitt of Dedicate Recruit, and the lovely Gary Hebbard of Cyberfort Group, the almost lovely co-host of this show.
Almost.
Almost.
That's funny. Well, I quite like it when you do.
Yeah, bird on a bike. She started on my teeth, so I'm not forgiving her about that. But anyway, we'll be back with another show next week. Thank you for joining us on the Bunker Show. We'll see you all soon. Take care. Have a good week. Bye for now.
This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.